is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
It is the 4th of March. We are not that far away from the start of spring. And was obviously a point last night when I did finally get my yard mowed that grass is growing, things are growing quickly. Thought we'd give you some time to get a little bit of extra advice about things. Steve Rehnquist from the Oregon State University Extension Service, thanks for coming in.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So I guess right now as people start to look around and on their property and their yards, whether it's a small lot in town or a few acres or a lot of acres, if you had one starting place, what's the most important thing for people to be doing right now?
Right now, you want to think about the trees that are still dormant. You know, there a lot of buds are pushing, but a lot of trees are still dormant. So if you need to do any serious pruning, any significant large pruning, do it to the trees that are not really breaking bud. You know, there are a lot of them that are going to bleed if you go out and cut now, that if the tree is pushing, you know, buds already. Don't get too concerned. If you see the moisture, the water kind of flowing out of these plants after you prune them, don't worry too much. You know, it'll stop. It might go on for a week or something, but it'll stop, and it doesn't hurt them. There's plenty of moisture in the ground. The other thing you want to do is, like with fruit trees, that sort of thing, grapevines, anything that really is still dormant, you know, go after it now. That's really more time critical.
If you wait too long, then you really can't trim some things, right?
Well, that's right. They're, especially if you really have a lot of beautiful flowering plants, flowering trees, you really don't want to be going out after them. And even though they might be starting to break bud a little bit, you'd say, oh, should I prune them? Well, you shouldn't prune them anyway, because you'll prune off all your beautiful flower display. Let's say crabapple or some other type of flowering, rhododendron or azaleas, and all of these beautiful spring flowering plants we have in this area. You know, hold off on those. You can prune those if you want, not dramatically, but you can prune those after they're done blooming. You can get in there, deadhead, and thin them out a little. The same is true with the trees like crabapple. You can get in there and prune it a little if you need to. But if you have dramatic limb removal needs, you know, do that in the dormant season like January or February.
And just looking around at my yard yesterday, there were some little things where you saw, you know, maybe a branch that had kind of died along the way, at least it looks like it to me, things like that that you maybe do some cleaning up of.
Absolutely. And we tell people that really, when they ask, well, if I've got some dieback in plants and so on, what time of year should I prune? And really the response is when your pruning shears are sharp, you know? So basically go out anytime during the year. If you see a dead limb, it's always better to remove it. Now, when you're removing, if you've got a tree or a big plant of some sort and you're removing a branch, don't leave a big stub. You know, I see that a lot where people will prune and they'll leave maybe a 4 or 5 inch stub. You know, prune in on a tree, you want to prune in within about a quarter inch of where that branch originated. And so they often call it the branch collar or the branch bark ridge there. But just stay outside of that little branch collar. It kind of is a swollen area on the tree branch.
It would seem like sometimes it's easier to get sort of close and leave more of that there. What happens if you do that?
Yeah. Well, if you do leave, let's say, several inches or so, the tree branch will die back, of course. It dries out and it dies back. And what happens is it actually dies back and dries out back into the main trunk or the main area, the main significant branch if it came off of a large one. And Why is that bad? Well, you know, you've just basically blocked part of the tree from getting the nutrients and water and things that it needs, when it, and rot will eventually begin there. So the idea is the all of these limbs on larger trees especially have what they call that branch bark ridge. It's and it's a collar, a swollen area right near. And that is a protective zone on a tree. So if you stay outside of it when you cut, like that half inch, quarter half inch that I'm talking about, if you stay outside of that and let that ridge leave it intact, the disease can't get through that, and so it can't die back into the trunk.
Are you still seeing an increased interest in gardening? It seems like some of that started really during the 2009 recession. Is that still going?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and the growth continued all during the teens. But of course, as you might imagine, now with lockdowns and people having to stay home and gosh, what do I do? We've had a tremendous number of new contacts from people that have never gardened and just asking us to coach them along on various projects. So right now is, I would say, there's probably more people gardening in America right now than ever before.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's huge. And if you go to the box stores or any of the garden stores and so on, yeah, they'll verify that. They'll tell you they're getting record sales on all of their products.
Is it partially just to grow vegetables, or is it just to be able to do something?
Yeah, I think a little of both, but I do think that the real push came from people wanting to grow some of their own food and grow more of their own food anyway. And so that's probably the major push. But after you've spent a year kind of being asked to stay quiet and stay home, you know, people can only do so much inside the house. You got to get out and get around and be active. And so it's a marvelous activity for this sort of the shutdown.
Are there certain vegetables that seem to be the most popular?
Yeah, there are. And I think people always migrate toward about two or three. And one is tomatoes. Americans just love tomatoes. Well, everybody loves tomatoes to cook with and so on, and fresh, et cetera. And of course, along with that, you probably get little peppers and stuff. But the other one that when people have the space, they really love to grow greens, you know, just lettuces and, you know, all sorts of different things for salads. And then probably the third one, again, they need space, but people try to grow melons. Now, frankly, I can give most people advice that the best melons are coming from hotter climates than what we have here. And so you can try to grow melons here, and they do okay, but they're not going to be as big and beautiful and sweet as watermelon or cantaloupe or muskmelon, whatever, that's grown in California, you know, Southern California or the valley down in California.
So what else do people try to grow that really doesn't grow here?
You know, about when I came here into this county about 20 years ago, I used to try to grow some of the real warm season crops that come out of the south. So like I was saying, like watermelon and cantaloupe and stuff, and they didn't do too well. And another one was okra. Now my wife loves okra, and so every year I dutifully would plant some okra, and frankly it just didn't get the heat units that it wanted. And so, you know, all of a sudden in about maybe 2014, 2015, I'd started getting a few okra that were surviving. And now I plant it every year because it does well. So obviously, you know, we've had this warming trend, and it's allowing us to grow different things.
What about fruit? What grows well around here?
Yeah, well, the two almost don't fail crops would be apple and pear. And the only problem with apples and pears is to have nice quality fruit, you have to do a fair amount of work. And that entails a lot of thinning when all that little fruit sets on the tree. So you got to really thin a lot. Often you'll drop 75-80% of that fruit right off. You'll snip it off so the others get nice size. And the problem also is codling moth. You get the worms in the apples and pears. And if you don't put an application out to control that, you're going to have wormy apples. And so that takes some timing and a little bit of technology.
All right, there's a good point to take a break. Back with more Steve Rehnquist from the Oregon State University Extension Service. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson coming at 1. Later, KQEN Local Talk at 4. Northwest Wine Radio. Brian Calvert talking about wine, beer, and spirits from around the Northwest. Steve Rehnquist here from the Oregon State University Extension Service as we are getting ready for spring. For people that want to plant some vegetables, maybe plant other things as well, you were telling me off the air during the break there about the importance of a soil thermometer, and honestly, I didn't know that existed.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the tools that's probably least appreciated by vegetable growers, home vegetable growers. The soil temperature is critical to knowing that is critical to when to plant and to plant properly and what types of food crops to plant. So, for example, right now, you can be planting peas and some of the other winter things, and they can tolerate peas. Gosh, they can tolerate temperatures right down into the mid-30s, you know, without any issue at all. And the soil temperature only needs to be, you know, 45, 50. But at the same time, if you don't know that, gosh, the tomato and broccoli, you don't plant them at the same time and at the same soil temperature, you know, you're going to have a failure with one of those. And usually people want to plant too early. And so with things like peppers and tomatoes and melons, you really don't want to be planting unless that soil is over 60 degrees. And if you can wait till 65, it's even better. But they'll probably survive. And that's with transplants. If you're putting seeds in the ground, you do want to wait till 65 degrees with some of these other, with the warm season crops. But if you have carrots and broccoli and chard and cauliflower, kale, any of these, transplants can go in the ground at 50, 55, and then they'll do fine. And seed probably 55 to 60 in that range. And so temperature, soil temperature is really critical. And these soil temperature gauges just look kind of like a meat thermometer that you'd stick in the side of a turkey or a roast, you know, to see if it's done on the inside. And they just have a spike that goes in the ground and then a nice dial on the top.
So I would guess that means that, you know, if it's a 65-degree day outside, that doesn't necessarily correlate to the soil temperature.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would say it's pretty, if you are consistently getting warm weather, then the soil temperature often will be close to that. But you, typically this time of the year, you're going to run into probably a 5 to 10-degree difference between the air temperature. If it's 60 today, the soil's probably closer to 50.
What about fertilizing your yard? I was looking when I mowed last night. I've got, I think I've got some moss, or maybe it needs to be thatched, I'm not sure. But obviously, fertilization can make a big difference. I mean, if you have like an average lawn, like I do, it looks okay. It doesn't look perfect. But you see those perfect lawns, and it seems like they always are fertilized.
Yeah. Well, a couple things. This is the season, a good season to rent one of those dethatchers. If you go out in your yard this winter, the weather was beautiful in January, and moss went crazy. And I noticed in my yard, moss is thick all over. So you rent a dethatcher, and you get out there and you rip away at it. And then you'll rip up a little bit of the grass. But frankly, you rip up this stuff, you rake it out, and then you come back in and you use one of the products that are on the market for knocking out moss. And usually they're a product that contains zinc or one of these heavy metals, and they will kind of finish it off. But if you try to use those products that where you just scatter some of that on the lawn without that dethatching first, you really aren't going to be very successful. It's not going to get down into the bed of the grass. So that's critical. Now fertilizing, really the key time for fertilization, putting out nitrogen for your lawn. That's the key nutrient. You'll want to get one of those fertilizer bags that will say like 5,000 square feet good for, and then get one of the whirly bird spreaders and put that fertilizer out and kind of calculate that you're putting it out over the proper area, the size of the area. And that fertilizer is optimum right now. Right. Well, it's a little bit early right now. We're heading into a cool kind of damp spot. But if you look in late March and early April, fertilization at that point for a lawn is excellent. And then hit it again in May sometime. And if you're one of those people that really kind of primps their lawn constantly, the other thing you want to focus on is the mower. Keep your mower blade sharp and keep the height of that cut that you know your grass type. You want about at least a 2-inch height, 2.5, with things like perennial rye and some of the fescues and so on. But if you've got a real low growing creeping bent grass, you cut it at an inch tall, so all those things will make your lawn look more beautiful, definitely.
Well, and there's people like me that when you say sharpen lawnmower blade, I'm like, I don't know that I've ever done that.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I'm that's, rough on lawnmowers, and after a number of years, I just go get another one.
Yeah, normally, the best thing to do is to maybe every winter, when you're doing your little overhaul where you change the oil. Of course, you should change your oil, too.
Okay, yeah, okay, there we go.
And change your oil and sharpen the blade every winter, and then bring it back in. And actually, that sharp blade is pretty helpful because it really makes a cleaner cut. And that's critical for not getting disease in your lawn.
Well, and I'm terrible at that. But then when I think about, for instance, in the kitchen, you know the difference from a sharp versus a non-sharp knife. You're trying to cut, a steak or something. Yeah. So I guess we should learn, by that and do that. But some of us aren't very good at actually doing that. What about for planting flowers? If you want to get some flowers going in the yard, what's the timeline on that?
Yeah. Well, with flowers, most of the bulbs, of course, you plant them in the fall and they're blooming right now. They're just kicking in. The daffodil's great. The tulip's coming on pretty soon. And the other flowers are in general around here. I kind of encourage people to use mostly perennials. I like the perennials like a daylily. They're just kind of bulletproof. They're really tough, hardy. They come back every year. You just kind of prune off the tops in the fall when they're done. The other things that other types of flowers, there are a lot of beautiful summer flowers, and if you want to go through that, it's a lot of extra labor really to either go out and buy little six-pack cell packs of transplants of marigolds or zinnias and all these. But frankly, the one nice thing about a lot of these flowers, getting them into your yard, that they really are provided a wonderful source of pollen for all of our pollinators. And pollinators are under a lot of pressure these days. It just seems like the environment and other things are making it tough on them. So if people can plant a lot of flowers, that definitely gives our pollinators a nice choice of food source.
And when you're thinking about maybe planting a shrub or a tree, do you find that people sometimes don't think as far down the road. They plant something because it would look good there now, but what happens in 5 years?
Yeah, that happens a lot, I think. And even to those of us that know how to plan real well, we tend to look at a plant in the nursery and we say, oh, that's a beautiful plant. I really want to put that in the yard. And then we come home and we don't really have a coherent pattern of where we're putting things. And so this, where you'll often see this the most, is things like somebody planting rhododendrons in the front of their house when they're small plants. And then within about 4, 5, 6 years, those plants now are up blocking the windows, you know, so you can't see out of your windows. So then what do? Well, we get out there and whack them, you know, and that kind of hurts the natural form of these plants.
So for the Oregon State University Extension Service, with the pandemic and everything, what types of things are you guys able to do now?
Well, frankly, most of the teaching that I've been doing is online. And we can't do any in-person programming. So what I typically am doing now with producers, I work a lot with the agricultural community. I have to just give a lot of calls around right now and just say, hey, do you have any issues? Anything I can help you with? You know, we've kind of bounced back into the higher COVID, you know, point, and you know, you can't be interacting, you know, as much. And OSU has asked us to, you know, to wait till we get back to the other, whatever that other level was, that little lower. And when we do, then we can start interacting, you know, one-on-one, you know, wear our masks and get out, and then I can start helping. But I'm getting a really record number of phone calls and emails being forwarded from my office where we're not allowed to be.
Right.
And they're forwarding them to where I do have an office, is basically at home.
All right, Steve Rehnquist from the Oregon State University Extension Service, thanks for coming in.
Ah, you're welcome.
1258 at News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.